Thanks again to everyone that's read, helped us open the meeting, and I'd like to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Big welcome to any visitors with us this evening. We're glad that you're here, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room. I hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker this evening who's going to share for 40 or 45 minutes their experience, strength and hope, their journey to, into and through Narcotics Anonymous. And we have a special person who knows them very well. I'm going to ask if they'd be kind enough to introduce them. So, Bill, could I ask you to introduce Dawn to us, please?
All right. Gee, I wasn't planning on doing this. I'm not quite sure what to say. Dawn and I were talking the other day, and I remember the first meeting she came to. There was her and another woman, and they were. I looked at both of them, and I thought, "There's not a chance in hell either of these two are going to stay clean," because they were just both absolutely insane, and this was a meeting where there was a lot of crazy people to begin with. But even by the standards of that meeting, you know, they were really over the edge. And it took her a while to finally stay clean, but she did. And she just does what she's supposed to do. And the biggest thing that she does is she works with a whole lot of new people, and she always has. And I think that's the best kept secret in recovery. We just don't talk enough about that. The key to this is working with others. It really is. You know, how do I know if I have it unless I'm trying to give it away? So anyway, her story is a lot more interesting than my talking. So let's listen to Dawn.
Thank you, Bill. Dawn, please share with us.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. My name is Dawn. I am wonderful today, and I am definitely an addict.
Hi, Dawn.
Hello, Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello, everyone. Okay, so my clean date is June 8th, 2007. And just to let you know that I have a clean date. I just celebrated 15 years about a week and a half ago. And why do I say I'm wonderful? We were talking about that before the meeting started. I'll get that out of the way real quick first. I was getting kicked out of rehab with about 19 days clean. I had spent 11 days in rehab and 5 days in the psych ward and 2 days back at rehab, and was basically telling them I could not do what they were requiring me to do. My anxiety was too bad, and I'm like, the pipes are talking to me, I'm hearing voices, can't deal with this. And they said, well, if you cannot participate to, the full extent of what we expect of you, then you're going to have to go. I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to go then. And then they turned around and said, if you walk out that door, there's no way you're going to stay clean. I said, well, I'm going to have to try. And, I can't stay here. And they're like, well, you have to stay here. And I said, well, I can't do what you're asking me to do. They're like, well, you're going to have to go. I go, well, I'm going to have to go. Well, you can't stay clean if you go. I mean, it was like this constant thing that they were doing to me. And it was crazy. And it was just making me like go, ah. So I had this notebook, and it had a like a see-through kind of clear cover on it. And I had a photograph of myself and my mother as a child in the 70s. And I just had this really wide-eyed little girl look. And I look down at this picture that's under the front cover of my notebook, so I can see through the cover, and I'm looking at the picture. And, you know, I had been carrying it around. I don't know why, but I'd been carrying it around. And I look down at this picture, and I just said to myself, just stay like this little girl. Just stay wide-eyed and full of wonder. Just stay wide-eyed and full of wonder. Just stay wonderful. Because wide-eyed and full of wonder means I'm going to approach every day like it's a new experience, like it's something new to explore, like it's something I haven't seen before, something I haven't tasted before or heard before or seen before, touched before, felt before, like a little kid. I'm going to go out and explore the world, you know, and everything will be new. I'm going to be wonderful, full of wonder, like that wide-eyed little girl. And that's why I'm wonderful. So, my story. When I was a little girl, my sister, who is about 7 years older than I am, was more of your typical addict who started using at more of a typical age, you know, early teens. And, you know, this is not her story, but her story is kind of my story, because she got into legal problems and, you know, shoplifting. I actually got arrested with her while she was shoplifting. She was like 14 or 15, and I was like, I don't know, 7 or 8. And, you know, I had no clue what was going on. I, you know, I was playing with like doll babies and shit. So, anyway, we all had to go to family counseling, and I saw what her behavior was doing to the family. I saw how drugs, and I didn't know the word addiction at the time, but I knew what taking drugs did to the people around you. I knew how it made my parents, you know, angry, and how they fought with each other, and how they fought with my sister, and how my brother isolated, and how I was the only one in family counseling who actually, you know, said anything, because I was like too naive to not say anything, you know, be out of the mouths of babes. You know, I was like, well, I don't know, why don't we just blah blah blah, you know. Oh, she's so profound for a young kid. No, kids just say what they say, you know. So you know, I saw the damage that it did to the family, and I took a vow, I'm never gonna do drugs, you know. I'm never going to do that shit. But addiction, I didn't know, ran in my family. You know, my dad's mom, I didn't know this until years later. You know, she took her nerve pills. Didn't know that, you know, until many years later. And my mother, totally an addict in everything except the drugs, you know, complete out of control addict in every way, shape, and form except the drugs. So, you know, it's not as easy to spot, but, you know, total unmanageability. So addiction was kicking my ass long before the drugs kicked in, because I was a late bloomer as far as, you know, the drugs kicking my ass. But as a teenager, you know, I was like, no drugs for me, straight edge, you know, no alcohol for me, no cigarettes for me. But all of my friends were all the drug users and, you know, the people who smoked cigarettes and all the people who drank, you know, even though I was like the nerd, the A student, you know, even though I was kind of like the punk rocker, you know, I was still, you know, the nerd. But all my friends, they were all the addicts. But I shoplifted and I had lots of sex, and it was like addiction, you know? And, consequently, I had a child when I was 18 years old, and that kind of happens when you have lots of sex as a teenager. And, you know, I also had this, you know, impending feeling of doom that came over me at, you know, that age when a lot of people start using, that 13, 14, 15 years old. But, you know, I didn't fill it with, you know, drugs. I filled it with the other stuff instead. Now, in my 20s, I put myself through, well, I put myself through beauty school. My son and I, you know, we lived alone. I had different, you know, relationships off and on, almost always with someone who was an alcoholic or a drug addict, almost always. All my friends were, you know, alcoholics or drug addicts, you know, just, or, you know, whatever. They just were. I mean, because they're my tribe. Hello. You know, I mean, I didn't use, you know, for a long time, you know, shit, I was too poor to use, you know, but it was like, I was the, you know, what they call the, sober driver. You know, I was the person they would call up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Can you pick me up from the bar? You know, can you pick me up from the party? You know, or I would be the person who would drive to the concert and drive everyone home or whatever, you know, or I could be a social drinker or whatever, you know, no thanks, I'm good, you know, one for me, I'm good, I have to drive home in 2 hours, you know, whatever, you know, just totally normal, whatever. Shopping was out of control. I ended up getting a pretty good job. I had a teaching job with a hair color company, bought a house, had 2 cars, you know, ended up getting pretty decent in life. Oh my God, shopping out of fucking control, man. I had $100 a day habit at the secondhand stores, you know, like the thrift stores. And it wasn't like once a week. It was like three, four, five, 6 days a week. And now I had like a six bedroom ghetto mansion, so I had a lot of space to fill, but it was filled top to bottom with just stuff. Like, this isn't addiction. Hello? I mean, just more is more. Just stuff. And, you know, once again, I've got the friends and I've got the boyfriends, and they're all addicts, alcoholics, drug users, drug abusers, just, you know, shady people, unsavory people, people who stole from me, people who abused me, people who used me, just, you know, and yes, there were good people in my life, but peppered in through there, there were some really rough people in my life as well. So, having nothing to do with drugs, I ended up filing bankruptcy. And that was just my addiction kicking my ass in every other aspect of my life. You know, spending, codependency, you know, bailing other people out of their problems with my money, credit card debt, you know, compulsive debting, gambling, you know, just stuff. You know, I had to file bankruptcy, and, and I lost my teaching job, and it had nothing to do with using. But, you know, I had all these friends that were users, and, I just said, you know, I've done all this shit for all these people. I'm going to do something for myself. For the first time in my life, I'm going to do something for me. I'm going to go get high. And so I asked a friend of mine to go get me some drugs, like some real drugs, like some serious street drugs. And and he's like, "Who's this for?" I said, "It's for me." And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's for me." He's just like, "Oh, come the fuck on." I'm like, "No, really, get it for me. Get me X amount, get me some works, you know, and I want to do it. Show me how." And he's like, "Are you sure?" I said, "I'm serious as a heart attack." He's like, "Okay." So like at the age of about 30, I jumped into the pool in the deep end with lead boots on. There was no like, you know, gateway drug, you know, this was just how I did it. And there was like always a weird part of me that always kind of knew it was going to happen, you know. Just some weird part of me that was like, one day, this is just the way it's going to play out, you know. I don't know when, don't know where, but I know it's just going to happen. You know, I've just got this rock star thing inside of me that's just gonna come out one day. So for a little while, I just did it every now and again. And then eventually I used because I didn't want to feel a certain way. I was pissed off. And I used because I was pissed off. And I was suddenly not pissed off anymore. And I was like, this is cool, you know? And then I started using because I was having some health problems. And I started using a little tiny bit every day. and I became a little bit, we'll just say, physically addicted to the little tiny bit I was doing every day, but that was okay. Just doing a little tiny bit every day. But I was controlling it, I thought, you know, because I, you know, had it all set out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all in my little envelopes. And but there was a day when I was very upset and I said, I'm going to use because I don't want to feel this way because I'm upset. And I knew that it was a hallmark moment. This was a, you know, like a moment that was a line in the sand that I couldn't uncross. I'm using because I don't want to feel this way, because I am upset. And I'm crying because I got in a fight with my boyfriend because he's a dick, basically. And, you know, I don't want to feel this way anymore. And it's Monday, and I pick up Tuesday's bag. And I use. And I said, I can't undo this. I can't undo this. And I did it anyway. And that's a moment that is like burned in my head, you know? So about 3 months from the time that I started using every day later, I had built up such a tolerance. I had about $1,000 a day habit, and I was selling, and I was driving like an hour and a half away to go buy it from like some shady guy, you know, and I'm driving across state lines and shit, and, you know, out of control. And I wanted to quit. I wanted to quit. And I, you know, had only been using for a short period of time, but I wanted to quit, and reached out for help, and didn't get the answers I was looking for. But no one suggested anything like NA to me. I remember calling the methadone clinic, and they were just like, you just need to go to detox. And I'm like, I do $1,000 a day worth of dope. And they were like, you just need to go to detox. I'm like, I want to get on methadone. And they're like, you just need to go to detox. I mean, this is like 20 years ago, you know. And anyway, a couple years later, I find a drug that I don't have to do every day. I do it because I want to do it instead. So that's like a win-win, right? We call that substitution. I call it getting a monkey off my back. The only problem is I wanted to do it all the fucking time. And within like 2 weeks of switching out my drugs, I get arrested 3 days after my birthday. Oh my goodness. The cop comes knocking, knock, knock, knock on my car window. I'm in my car with this unsavory girl and who has warrants out for her arrest. And, you know, oh my goodness gracious. And the cop's like, you know, can you roll down your window? But all I hear is like, you know, I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't understand you. I'm really high right now. So, anyway, I get arrested. I go to jail for a couple nights. I end up getting sentenced to something called intervention in lieu of conviction, but it's where you get the opportunity to go to rehab instead of going to jail. But it takes me like 5 months to get into rehab. So during this time, I end up, oh, I forgot about the fact that I lost my house. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I lost my house during that time. And right before that, I lost my house. My mom was in Australia, and I moved into her house while she was in Australia. Yeah, that was right before I got arrested. Anyway, you know, because when it rains, it pours. So anyway, I got sentenced, and it was like 5 months before I made it into rehab. And I was, you know, I walked out of my mom's house, did a bunch of couch surfing. I had a car, so I was like the resource girl because I got my license back. I got my tags on my car up to date. I got car insurance. So I was a legal driver. So I drove like all of the boosters, you know, all the shoplifters. I drove all of them around. I drove all of the call girls around. I drove, you know, some of the dealers around, you know, anybody who needed a ride, I drove because that was a resource. They needed someone with a legal car and a legal driver, and that was me. So, you know, I could always get a money for gas, a little bit of money for food and drugs. And that's basically what I did. And then I went to rehab. And right before I left, I remember talking to my best friend's mom on the phone and crying, telling her, I don't want to go. And she said to me, honey, I've been praying for you, and I know that you will get whatever it is you need to get from there, whatever it is. Now, while I was in rehab, the week, first week I was there, we weren't allowed to leave. And this one girl was like, hey, I have an NA text. And we were like, ooh, what's that? And so there were like four or five of us, and we sat around in a circle while everyone else went out to a meeting, and we passed around the book, and we opened it up, and we started reading Who is an Addict. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. It's like they wrote this about me. And I've heard like so many people say this, you know, but it's true. It is so true. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how do they know this? You know, oh yeah, because it's written by addicts, about addicts, for addicts. That's right. Duh, you know, so there you go. So that's what I got. Is that exposure to NA. And yeah, I made it to my first meeting that Bill was talking about. I remember where it was, when it was, who was speaking. I don't remember what they talked about, but I remember the first outside NA meeting that I went to, that rehab took me to. And then I remember when I left rehab in that first night, and I had to go back to the house that I had left 19 days earlier, that I had been using in. And I had to go back to that house. And I was like, I don't know what to do. You know, am I going to be able to stay clean here? I don't know. So I went to a meeting, and it was in another fellowship, but it's the only meeting I knew where to go that night. And then the next night, I found an NA meeting, and it was totally in the ghetto. And these people just, you know, I'm like in a plaid skirt with big leather boots and a blue mohawk and all this like jewelry all across my face, and these big, beautiful black ladies pull me up and they're like, girlfriend, we love you. And they took me out to dinner and they said, we're going to keep you safe. And they gave me their numbers. And I called them every day, and they were my lifeline for a couple of weeks. And they told me what meetings to go to, and, you know, they gave me other ladies' numbers and introduced me to as many women as they could. And you know, they didn't judge me. They didn't look at me like, who the fuck are you? You know, they didn't do any of that. And it was beautiful. It was absolutely the love and the genuine compassion was so beautiful. And I slept in a tent that summer, like around various places in the city so that I could stay clean, because I didn't have anywhere else to go, you know? So anyway, I didn't stay clean the whole time. That was not my original clean date. I can tell you a laundry list of why I relapsed, but the real reason is because I'm an addict. Addicts use. Yeah, the sponsor I had relapsed. Yeah, you know, I had started on psych meds and I wasn't, you know, quite stable. And I was like, you know, having like weird hallucinations and shit. Yeah, I had been living upstairs from a drug dealer again. Yeah, you know, XYZ. Yeah, my mother tried to take custody of my son. And yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm an addict. We use. That's the reason. And unless we are in a spiritual condition and we have had a spiritual awakening that has recovered us from that desire to use, we will use. And unless we maintain a spiritual condition that keeps us from the desire to use, we will use. So I used. There you go. And I came to meetings when I was high. I stopped claiming clean time. I had a desire to be clean. I had a desire to get high. But I had a desire to be clean. So I felt like, oh my God, am I a hypocrite? No, because I have a desire to be clean. my desire to get high is more than my desire to be clean is here. And eventually, my desire to be clean outgrew my desire to be high. And the last time I used, you know, I thought to myself, if I use again, it's not going to take me anywhere I haven't already been. It's not going to show me anything I haven't already seen. I'm not going to experience anything I haven't already experienced. It's not going to be anything new. It's going to be the same old, you know? I want to grow. I want to be wonderful, you know? I don't want to be stagnant. I don't want to rot, because as long as I believe that I am green, I will continue to grow. But as soon as I believe I'm ripe, I'll start to rot. You know, I got to be green. I got to keep moving. And keeping using is staying in the same place. You know, I got to grow. Now, the compulsion was hard. My body wanted to use. My brain was made up. I was like, I'm done. My body craved it for a couple of weeks. But I told everybody, I'm done. And so if I was like, hey, I think I want something, they were like, no, you don't. I'm like, you're right, you're right. And, you know, even the people who, it was so funny, because even the people who, it was so funny, even the people who were around me who used were like, aren't you supposed to put yourself on 5 minutes? I was like, oh my God, that's right. I told you about that, didn't I? And they're like, yeah, you read to me from that book all the time. You're starting to get to me. I'm like, you're right. I have to put myself on 5 minutes. So yeah, I got through it. And I eventually, the compulsion was done. Because I had made up my mind, but my body was craving it, you know? So there was like a physical obsession to it, you know? I was like, oh no, I don't want this. But my body was like, yes, you do. I had a sponsor then. Oh, kind of for lack of better terms, a sponsor. And right after I had a year clean, a year and 10 days, they passed away. I felt like my arms and legs had been cut off. And I was devastated. And some people were like, you need to find a sponsor right away, ASAP. And other people were like, no, you need to just like, you know, use your home group. Just rely on the people around you. Wait for it to happen. And, you know, and there was this kind of annoying person who had kind of had me under their wing for a long time, who was my de facto sponsor, who after a couple of years, I actually introduced them as my sponsor. And they said, oh, I'm your sponsor? I go, yeah, I guess so. But I love them so much, and I wouldn't have them any other way. And they have been my sponsor ever since. The way we do steps is fast and often, fast and often, fast and often. Now, when I work with people, I do it a little slower than my sponsor. I usually take a month or so to go through the steps with someone because I'm usually doing it long distance. We go through and we really identify the part we play in our misery, you know? And that's a big thing. I wish, you know, everybody says this, but I really wish there were like steps for everyone in the world, because I just like saying to people when they're bitching about shit, what part are you playing in your misery? And they just look at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, and I'm like, no, really, what part are you playing in your misery? And they just like look at you dumbfounded and they're like, you know, and but yeah, go through the steps quick and often. I do work with a lot of people. A lot of times the people I work with, I get them through the steps and then they end up with someone else as a sponsor. And that's great because they have a working knowledge of the steps. If their new sponsor wants to take them through, you know, deeper, longer, that's great because now they have a working knowledge of what they're doing. You know, a lot of times I'm just people's cheerleader. You know, I work with a lot of people who have dual diagnosis, mental illness. I myself, oh my God, got the crazies up and down the street both ways. You know, I just started on a new med 3 weeks ago. And, you know, this has been a moving target for the past 16 and a half years. So, there you go. But always, 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 I'm, you know, have sponsees to this day. You know, I check in on them. Are you taking your meds? You know, even people who aren't my sponsees anymore, I check in on them, send them a text. How you doing? I miss you. I love you. You know, just people who are just, you know, support people, people who are just, you know, I'll get phone calls from people just asking me for advice or, you know, suggestions or something. We don't give advice. We just give suggestions. But, you know, like, I don't know what to do about my sponsee because they're blah, 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 or this or that. And I'm like, well, blah, 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 you know. So I do end up, you know, I guess helping secondhand, third hand. I don't know what that is, but, you know, I guess the big thing is to be each other's cheerleaders, you know, to be each other's support, to never give up on each other. And that's hard. That's hard. I recently just had a sponsee pass away and I never gave up on her. She was such a big bag of mess, but I loved her so much. And, you know, but, you know, but there you go. But I still love her so much. Miss her every day. Miss her big bag of mess every day. But yeah, stuck with her for 13 years. So, and 13 years of crazy. And wouldn't have it any other way, you know? So, because my sponsor has stuck with me through about the same amount of time. About 15 years of crazy. So there you go. I'm not really sure if I've said anything that would help anybody, but that's, I think that's my story and I'm sticking with it. So with that, thank you. I love you all and you all are wonderful. Thank you.